coming up on New York Now. Carl Hastie discusses Governor Cuomo's recent criticism of the legislature's one-house budgets.
He's the governor, you know, Angie's the Senate leader, you know, I'm the speaker. I think that our conferences elected us to get the job done. The people of the state of New York elected the governor to get the job done. And I just, you know, disparaging comments aren't helpful.
Our interview with the Assembly Speaker plus a wrap-up of the week's news is next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. With 2 weeks to go in the state budget negotiation, things do not appear to be going well.
Our sit-down with Speaker Carl Hastie is coming up. First, though, a wrap-up of the week's headlines.
Governor Cuomo held multiple events touting the need for a permanent property tax cap, including stops in the Long Island and Hudson Valley suburbs, where he also talked about the effects of the federal law that caps the deductibility of property taxes at $10,000. He wrapped up this speech with a promise to those in attendance.
I will tell you this as sure as I am before you today. If we do not have the permanent property tax cap in that state budget, this hand will never sign that state budget until it's in there. Thank you and God bless you.
The governor and members of his staff were critical of the One House budget proposals released this week by both chambers, which increased spending. He particularly noted the assembly has not passed a bill to make the tax cap permanent, which you heard is a must for him in the budget. Speaker Hastie responded Tuesday.
The problem you have here is, you know, if people just going to draw lines in the sand, you know, you can't just say, I got to have things my way. I'm not saying what the end product or end result is going to be on tax cap, but I just don't know how helpful it is. You know, I'm not standing here drawing lines in the sand that I got to have X in order to have a budget. You know, you can draw lines in the sand when you're dealing with yourself. I just don't think it's fair when you have to talk to two other parties.
In the same interview, Cuomo suggested Senate Democrats were still trying to find their footing. The governor has frequently criticized the new majority since the Amazon deal fell through last month. Andrea Stewart-Cousins had a name for the change in the governor.
I often wonder, I'm thinking it's SDDS, Senate Democratic Derangement Syndrome at this point. I don't understand what the problem is. He seems to be looking at our conference differently, but we've certainly worked and will continue to work to do the things that we mutually agree on.
And finally, Attorney General Tish James made a rare appearance at the state capitol this week, where she met with legislators on a bill that would close a double jeopardy loophole, which would prevent New York prosecutors from bringing the same charge against someone who has received a presidential pardon. This comes in the week where former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort received a second prison sentence, and 2 weeks after former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen had his memorable day of public testimony in Washington.
I recognize that there's a concept in the Constitution known as dual sovereignty, and it's important that each state have the ability to prosecute and to defend their state statutes. And so we are here to close that loophole, and we would urge the state legislature to move the bill.
James confirmed a report from earlier in the week that said her office has subpoenaed Deutsche Bank and Investors Bank as it looks into President Trump's financial dealings. It was spurred in part by Michael Cohen's recent testimony to Congress.
As you saw, there appeared to be a bit of acrimony between Governor Cuomo and legislative leaders. No coincidence that the budget deadline is just 2 weeks away.
Our Karen DeWitt got the chance to sit down this week with Speaker Carl Hastie in his Capitol office to discuss this and where the Democrats stand on the property tax cap, criminal justice reforms, and the legalization of adult-use marijuana.
Speaker Carl Hastie, thanks for joining us on New York Now. It's been a little while since you've been on, I think.
Thank you. Thank you for sitting with me, Karen. I appreciate it.
So we're talking during a week where the Senate and Assembly have released their One House budgets. As part of the budget process, it's going to start getting serious now. Your budget increases school aid over what the governor wants to do. And you also have some new taxes, including a new tax on the ultra-rich, multimillionaires and billionaires. What items have to be in the final budget out of what you have presented this week?
All of them. Our resolution is a statement of our priorities. I don't want to say it's not a wish list, it's hopeless. It really states that who we are and what we believe in as Assembly Democrats. But this is Albany. You have to agree with the governor and you have to agree with the Senate as well. But I'd always say largely we have a families first agenda. And so all of those things that tie into a family. But you know, I'd say chief among those, as always, is money for education, healthcare, higher education. Those are always the three, large staples of anything that we ever want to do.
Well, as you're probably well aware, Governor Cuomo began the week with a list of requirements, demands of things that he says has to be in the budget or he won't agree, including a permanent property tax cap, congestion pricing, criminal justice reform. I notice that the Assembly budget doesn't have the permanent property tax cap in it. Is that going to be a problem?
I see it as a problem. The Assembly's always gone along with the property tax cap. It doesn't expire until next year, and we said we'll gladly have that conversation, but we didn't feel it was something that had to be addressed in this resolution. There's other things that expire before this that we didn't include in the budget. MWBE, 15A, those things expire at the end of the year, and we didn't include it.
So you think the property tax could be done next year?
I'm just saying it's like, the governor decided to put it in his budget. Mm-hmm. And so it's his timetable. We just haven't said no. We just said it expires next year. And we didn't feel like we had to give an answer, based on March 11th. So we didn't say no. We haven't said yes. We just know it expires at the end of next year.
Well, the governor has been super adamant about that and his other things that he wants in the budget. What do you think of him kind of doing that, setting the terms with you guys?
I think once the governor hands his budget over to the legislature post the 30-day amendments, I think this is a way for him to keep himself engaged and state out, his priorities, where he is. And that's what I take it is that the governor said many things, over the years and during my time as speaker, and that's how he feels.
Well, he's known as somebody who likes to have control over things. Do you see this as him kind of wanting to take control over the whole budget?
I think it's a new dynamic, Democratic Assembly, Democratic Senate. I think this is his first experience for him, and I think he's trying to find his way through that as well.
Yeah.
So he's staking out his position, he's staking out what he feels, and now that the resolutions were passed yesterday, we'll start to get into serious negotiations and the things we can agree on, great. And hopefully it's a lot of things so we can give the state of New York a great budget.
Well, we'll get into that those dynamics in a moment, but I wanted to ask you about a couple of items in the budget and then related to the budget. One of them on the subject of taxes is the pied-à-terre tax on luxury apartments. Is that agreed to? Is that something that probably is going to be in the budget as a way of getting revenue for the MTA?
It's something that we have supported previously. We're happy that the Senate put it in as well. And even though the governor didn't put it in his budget, the fact that he's made comments that that he's open to it, I think is a good thing. I do think it's a way to raise revenue. It's not New Yorkers. It's people who have these. Usually, it's a lot of times they're not even United States citizens that they have these expensive apartments that they just use a couple of times a year. So it is a revenue item. We didn't tie it necessarily to anything. And so I guess it could be used for some availability for transit, but also there's been an expression from some members that, it is a housing revenue and that maybe that should be something that some of the revenue is used for as well.
Hmm. I want to ask you about some other items that might or might not be in the budget, legalizing recreational marijuana. You didn't put that in your budget proposal. Does that mean you think that you need to settle it after the budget, or could it still be in there?
Well, we put it we put a paragraph in that it's something that we're considering. So it was in the, wasn't in a budget bill, but we did address it in the resolution in the book because it was a revenue item. We're still open to looking at it being done in the budget. But as I said before, it's very complicated.
Yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions.
Right, there's a lot of unanswered questions. I know New Jersey just passed it, but there's still a lot of aspects that we have to look at, the decriminalization, also the, you know, the communities who have been hurt by the criminalization.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up. Your Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes has a proposal essentially making reparations for communities hurt under prohibition. Now, that's something that you really, you would like to see in there.
I've pretty much said that any agreement on marijuana has to address that first. So the first two aspects of adult use marijuana have to be the decriminalization and then also creating wealth and opportunities in the communities who have been hit hard, particularly if these are the communities that have been denied housing, people who have been caught up in the criminal justice system, have been denied housing, denied job opportunities. They have to, I think they would have to, mechanisms that reverse that have to be dealt with first.
There's also a bunch of criminal justice reforms you're interested in doing. What's the status of those right now?
I think we're having very productive conversations, and what I've tried to explain to people as well is, you know, when you try to change a system that has been in place for hundreds of years, not only is it about doing the right thing, but it's also educating constituencies who may have concerns of why there's a need to change. So you have to come up with the legislation that works, but you're also in the midst of trying to educate people as well. So there are challenges, but I believe there's a commitment from the governor, from us and the Senate to get it done, and I'm confident we will.
Yeah, we're talking about ending cash bail,
discovery
law
speedy
changes,
trial.
Speedy trial. You said that you feel like your whole speakership would have been in vain if you don't get these things done.
Yes.
And so they need to be done
this
year, you think?
Yes.
What about public campaign financing? Mm-hmm. You guys have like a statement of support, but no details. Now, why is that? The Assembly has passed public campaign finance before, right? Are you getting cold feet on that?
No, it's not necessarily cold feet. I'd say for me personally, you know, I voted for it in 2009, but that was before Citizens United.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2014, I know, or 13 or 14, it passed in the House, but I didn't vote for it. There's a number of things that I think need to be discussed. And my chief concern is, and particularly when in the New York City Council's model, you cap spending. They don't really have to deal with independent expenditures. And my concern
is you
can't regulate them. But if you're going to cap legislative spending, then you might as well let the IEs. They will be the ones determining the outcomes of elections. Because if you have two spending limits, two candidates spend at $175,000, and then some IE comes in and decides to spend $2-3 million, then the IEs will be deciding elections. So, and when the question was posed to me, I just simply said, it's a worthy conversation. Members want to have it, because I think that no one wants to exclude everyday individuals from participating in democracy. We think it's a good thing, but people also have to understand. You don't want to open the door to having IEs pretty much pick your legislator.
It sounds like from what you're saying, it's not going to happen.
No, I'm not saying that it's not going to happen. We put in a statement of support. We want the conversation to continue. Members are talking about it. But I just want people to understand it's a little more complicated than, say, the city's version. You know, for instance, and I know the governor mentioned this, and he and I, you know, have had the discussions on this. You know, pretty much in the city, it's a Democratic primary, and then that's it. But you know, you have members who have to run on two and three different lines, and so you have to come up with a mechanism to deal with maybe an assembly, a Democratic primary, an Independence Party primary, Working Families Party primary. And so we just want to have the conversations about it. So that's why we put in the statement of support, and we'll engage with the governor and the Senate on discussions. So no, I'm not saying that it's not going to be get done. We want to have the conversation.
As you mentioned a little while ago, this is the first time that Democrats have controlled both houses of the legislature with a decisive majority in like 40 years. I know that you and the Democratic leader, Andrea Stewart Cousins, get along pretty well. You told the New York Times that you viewed yourself and her as the Wonder Twins. Is it still a Wonder Twins relationship as the budget is getting going?
Yes. I, if you look at our two resolutions, I don't think there's anything in there where people would think that we have any issues. The relationship is great. I speak to her pretty often, speak to the governor pretty often. So I'm not, people shouldn't worry about how things are going. I think the Senate and the Assembly, we put forward our resolutions, we're ready to get to work, and giving the state a great budget.
Governor Cuomo, though, has taken a lot of shots at the Senate Democrats lately, saying they're inexperienced. He was angry, blaming them for the Amazon headquarters deal falling through. And he kind of harps on they don't have the experience to govern. And that's kind of made some people uncomfortable, given the fact that we have the first woman, first African-American woman Senate leader. I'm wondering if that makes you uncomfortable, what the governor's saying, and do you read something into that?
I as I've said publicly about, you know, other things the governor said, I just don't know how helpful it is. It's like we have work to do, and, you know, he's the governor, you know, Andrea's the Senate leader, you know, I'm the speaker. I think that our conferences and, elected us to get the job done. The people of the state of New York elected the governor to get the job done. And I just think, you know, disparaging comments aren't helpful. I've tried to add some humor to it with his, like I said, when he, with his lines in the sand. I've been referencing the Bugs Bunny, Yosemite Sam, where they kept drawing the lines in the sand. I just think people want us to get the job done, and I'm hopeful that that's what's going to happen.
So you don't think his comments are undermining the process a bit?
I don't think they're helpful, but that's more of, it's how Andrea feels. I think she's focused. I think she's capable. I think she's ready to get the job done, and I just think at some point we'll just figure it out.
And finally, you've been speaker for 4 years, which I can't really believe. Mm-hmm. You came at a very tumultuous time. Former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver had been indicted. Now he's facing prison term for corruption. You've run a relatively scandal-free assembly since then. I'm wondering, from when you got in, relatively unknown person, at least to most mm-hmm. people in New York State, and you've been speaker for a while, like what is different about the job that before you got it that you've learned?
I don't know if it's a difference. It's more responsibility. Before I was, you know, more worried about my district, the Bronx, the city, and then the state as a whole. I would just, whatever my colleagues around the state, what was important to them, I defer to them if they felt it was important. But I'd say I think I've gotten to know the state and the regions of the state, I'd say in a more detailed way. And that's actually been fun because, quite honestly, the tours of the state that I've taken, there's parts of the state that, as beautiful as this state is, I probably would not have seen them, or would not have seen them thus far in my life if not for having the opportunity and privilege to be speaker. So it's just probably having to know a knowledge of the state, the issues in more detail than when I was just a member.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Karen. Appreciate your time. Thank you for having me.
Busy week.
All right, and now for some more analysis. We're happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by John Campbell of the USA Today Network. So as we just saw, things do not appear to be going very smoothly. There is a lot of sniping, especially between the executive chamber and the Senate Democrats.
Yeah, absolutely. Things don't, at least the governor's office wants you to think that things aren't going smoothly. Whether they are actually not going smoothly, none of us are in that room. We don't know. But the governor's office over and over again is just sniping at Senate Democrats, you know, and there's still some anger from the Amazon deal that fell through that Governor Cuomo has blamed Senate Democrats for. And over and over, you've seen the governor's office come after the Senate Democrats' one-house budget. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't need to tell you guys this, but, you know, the one-house budgets aren't worth the paper they're printed on. I mean, they don't really mean anything other than just a statement of priorities. But often they're often viewed as kind of a wish list, and this year is no different. But for whatever reason, the governor's office is really, really hammering the Senate Democrats for their one-house budget and saying that there's a wide gulf on issues like criminal justice and marijuana. But then you talk to Speaker Carl Hastie of the Assembly and Andrea Stewart-Cousins, the Senate Majority Leader, and they say they're not that far apart on criminal justice. So it's kind of a choose-your-own-adventure and choose who you want to believe.
And it's not just Cuomo, too. We've seen the budget director, Robert Mujica, come out. His chief of staff have all been criticizing the Senate.
Fantasy land, I think, was the term that was used.
We need to get back to reality, not fantasy
land. Yeah, Melissa DeRosa, the governor's chief of staff, essentially, the secretary, she called their budget fantasy land. And Robert Mujica, the budget director, put out a statement late last night saying their budget is, quote, totally incredible. Mm. So I don't quite know what the strategy is here, but listen, these budgets come together at the last minute, always. The deadline's March 31st. Talk to me on March 28th, 29th, then we'll really have an idea of how close things are.
Okay, but with that in mind, the governor in the middle of the week said, we need to go back to the drawing board on this budget plan, especially as concerns healthcare, which is a big part of the budget, because of the proposed cuts in President Trump's, you know, federal budget plan, the broad stripes of which were put out earlier in the week. But of course, that budget is no more likely to come to pass than any of the one house budgets in the state legislature, as Democrats in the U.S. House have said it's DOA. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. You don't have Republicans controlling both houses of Congress, and so. You know, the chances of Nancy Pelosi and her conference going along with these steep federal health care cuts are very slim. Now, what also happened at that press conference is the governor rolled back $550 million in state health care cuts that he had been pushing to deal with this $2.3 billion shortage in revenues. And he rolled that back under the guise of saying, well, you know, if there's going to be these federal cuts, then we can't do these state cuts on top. But that was a win for a lot of the groups that rely on Medicaid funding to have that rolled back. They were very angry about it. They had protested at the Capitol, and they were able to get that rolled back.
Meanwhile, the governor has said that he will not approve a final budget. And the governor, we can get into this more granularly, but the governor has to approve certain of the budget bills, that he is not going to sign those bills unless the overall package includes the permanent property tax cap.
Yeah, and that is what he said is his greatest priority. You know, he came into office and he was elected in 2010 on the promise of a property tax cap. He got that through in 2011, and it's proven to be pretty popular with his constituents.
Republicans as well.
Republicans in particular. But some Democrats have some real problems with it. School groups have very serious problems. You know, sometimes it's very difficult for school groups for school districts to exceed the tax cap because they need a 60% vote from their the people that vote on their budget, and that's a tough sell when you're exceeding. It's difficult to get somebody to vote for a tax increase. So that's one of the things that these school groups are looking to roll back, and the governor said, no way, no how, not going to happen, permanent extension, no changes. So we'll see how that goes.
And we just heard Hastie tell Karen that he's in no rush to get this done, so whether that's going to be a real roadblock to getting an on-time budget, we'll have to see. But as Hastie, he's in no rush.
One other thing that it appears now is going to be left out of the budget, we'll see if it gets done before the end of the legislative session, is the legalization of adult recreational use marijuana. The governor basically conceded that it's going to be a complex regulatory system to set up. It's probably not going to get done in the next 2 weeks.
That's another issue where the governor said they're far apart and they may take that out of the budget. But then, you know, Liz Krueger, who's the Senate Finance Committee chairwoman, you know, she says we're not all that far apart. And she's also the lead sponsor of the Senate's marijuana bill. So that's another issue where the governor is saying they're far apart, but the legislature maybe not. But that being said, you know, both Hastie and Stewart-Cousins have previously said they think it might come out of the budget. It's looking like it might. But at the same time, you're also now seeing local governments, county governments, kind of rising up against it as they hear from law enforcement,
counties.
Exactly.
So the entirety of Long Island.
The entirety of Long Island, their county executives have said that they will likely back out, opt out. There's an opt-out provision in the governor's proposal. You've got Putnam County, Rockland County, Chemung County, all three of their county executives told us in the USA Today Network's Albany Bureau that they would recommend backing out as well. And there's other big counties that are kind of on the fence. Monroe County's on the fence. Westchester County's on the fence. So if you end up with this patchwork of counties that are going to allow the sales, you know, that could really impact the debate. But if they opt out, they don't get any revenue.
Right.
So yeah, the counties you mentioned, I mean, Nassau and Suffolk are controlled by Democrats.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's where we have to leave it. Thanks very much. Great analysis from John Campbell of the USA Today Network.
Thank you.
This week's New York Now poll question asks, do you support a pied-à-terre tax for non-primary homes worth more than $5 million? You heard the speaker's view on it. We want to know what you think. You can give us feedback at nynow.org. Last week, we asked if you would like to see the property tax cap become permanent. And 77% said yes. Thank you to everyone who voted. We hope to hear from you again at nynow.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs, plus links to us on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. There you'll find a link to the Capital Confidential blog, a great source for news and analysis for what's going on in Albany. It's also available at timesunion.com.
All right, I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.